For decades, the relationship between the US and Israel has been rock solid, a cornerstone of global politics. But right now, there are real signs that that's beginning to change. Not just because of rising tensions with Iran or the wars in Gaza and Lebanon, but because for the first time in years, parts of American politics are starting to seriously question that relationship. And when that happens, it doesn't just stay in Washington or in Jerusalem. It affects all of us. It's News Talk Daily. I'm Ciara Doherty. The US-Israel alliance has shaped some of the biggest decisions in global politics, from wars in the Middle East to the stability of oil routes that affect energy prices worldwide. Do we need to talk about the fuel protests last week? In simple terms, when that relationship shifts, the knock-on effects can hit everything from inflation to international security. And right now, it's being really tested. A recent push towards conflict with Iran hasn't gone to plan. And that's starting to feed a much bigger political conversation in the US. On the Democratic side, attitudes toward Israel have certainly already been shifting, particularly since the war in Gaza. But what's really turning heads is what's happening on the Republican side. High-profile, Trump-aligned voices like Tucker Carlson and Megyn Kelly are increasingly questioning whether backing Israel, especially in a potential conflict with Iran, is actually in America's interests. And that's a big change, because support for Israel used to be one of the few things that Democrats and Republicans broadly agreed on.
All American presidents since 1963 have done substantially what Israel wanted us to do. And now it's really hurting us. And I've been aware of this for decades, and I haven't said one word about it because it's not worth the fight. But now I see our country, its economy, its understanding of itself, in the process of being destroyed because our leaders, and not just our president, our entire Congress, many of our governors, did the bidding of a foreign power. Right. And so the problem is not simply Trump. The problem is the mechanism of control that allows a country of 9 million to control a country of 350 million. What is that mechanism? I'm not sure I know the answer.
Now that that consensus is starting to fracture, it raises a bigger question. Is it just a moment of real tension or the start of something more fundamental? Today, we're going to look at that from both sides. And I'm delighted to be joined from the United States by Freddie Hayward from The New Statesman. You're very welcome to the podcast, Freddie.
Good to be here.
I've outlined, I suppose, some of the reasons why we're looking at this relationship between Israel and the US, why it is so important and why it affects everybody around the globe. Can I get your take on that?
What's important is what America does in the Middle East. America is the imperial power. It is maybe not the world hegemon anymore, but it certainly is the most powerful country in the world. What it does affects all of us, as we are finding out right now, whether people go at the petrol station or you know, if they're getting any products in the store. That's quite clear. These things matter hugely because war matters and the global economy matters and supply chains matter. And the values of America, which has historically been one of Europe's closest allies, that completely matters because our culture, politics and history is utterly entwined.
Okay, so let's now go back to what's been happening in Iran. And as we said in the introduction here, if there was a plan, it doesn't seem to be going according to plan. So just how badly wrong is this going for Donald Trump?
Well, he was quite clear at the start that he thought this would only last a few days. He said that he didn't expect oil prices and the stock market to be affected as much as it has. And he was also promised, importantly, by Netanyahu, that the Strait of Hormuz would not close. We know this because the New York Times has reported a meeting back in February when Benjamin Netanyahu was in the West Wing, went down into the Situation Room and presented his plans for the war to Trump and to Trump's senior advisors. This was a key report that has sort of rippled through MAGA and has sort of depicted the entire war as something that at least the originator was Israel and Benjamin Netanyahu. And as you alluded to in your preface, that has elicited a big backlash across MAGA. So I think that now Trump has realized that it's much more of a quagmire than something that might resemble the operation in Venezuela. He is trying to get out. And even now, there are problems that the divergence between America and Israel are bringing to the fore, such as, for instance, the war in Lebanon. this is not a US aspect of the war, but it's something that is preventing the ceasefire with Iran from taking hold. So I think this will, in the long term, have a serious impact for US-Israeli relations. The irony almost is that we're at the high watermark now. Trump has taken US-Israeli cooperation to its highest point. And I think from here, it is probably just going to be a story of decline.
And you do really get that sense, don't you, from Donald Trump at the moment, that he wants out of this quagmire, as you put it. I mean, you only have to look at his posts on Truth Social. I think there was over 60 posts in 6 days there. The volume of the posts, the content of the posts are pretty unhinged. And they do speak to somebody who is feeling, I think, isolated and is feeling under pressure.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, he's been in these situations before, and I don't think he actually ever feels much pressure. It's almost like whatever the issue, whether it's war or whether it's receiving McDonald's or whether it's speaking at a rally, it all sort of passes through his mind at the same frequency. But yes, I think what we should be constantly looking at within this administration is those that sit just beneath the president. We also saw in that New York Times report that Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State, and J.D. Vance, the Vice President, have clearly briefed out that they were not initially supportive of the war. That's indicative of the fact that they recognize that it was going to be unpopular, and also it was going to be perceived as something orchestrated by Israel. Trump is increasingly a figure who's sort of fading from the picture, at least within the core politics of the MAGA movement. He, of course, is still most important on the broader global stage, but we should be looking at how those people slightly beneath him, those that will take over, those that have been that are slightly younger, who are slightly more intellectual, slightly more fervent in their beliefs, how they are seeing this, because that's the best way we can understand what's going to happen in the future.
Let's, I suppose, go back to how we've ended up at this moment, because you referenced that brilliant reporting which is in the New York Times, which I would highly recommend anybody spends a couple of minutes reading. And it is written by two journalists very close to the White House who, as you say, have clearly been really well briefed by, it appears, J.D. Vance and Marco Rubio. And the sense is that Washington feels that they were really missold on what action against Iran would achieve by Benjamin Netanyahu. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, sure. I mean, it seems that in that meeting in the Situation Room, Benjamin Netanyahu said, look, we have this golden opportunity to knock out the Iranian leadership. We can knock out their military to such an extent that they will be completely demobilized for a generation. And we might even be able to get Mossad to foment a rebellion inside Iran. So that was the promise. So this is broad regime change that will be this generational defeat for a regime that has been an enemy of the US for 47 years now, or however long it's been. That obviously didn't happen. And what was interesting was that the day after, once the American intelligence services did their own analysis, they went to the president and said, this is not exactly true and this is exaggerative and this is missing the key point here. Maybe, yes, we can get the supreme leader, but there's no way in which Mossad can foment the rebellion, etc. So it's not as if Trump didn't have all the information in front of him. It's just that he decided to go along with the Netanyahu's perception of what would happen rather than his own intelligence services. So I think that's probably going to be a bit of a problem for him down the line once we see these implications come to the fore in the next few weeks. I mean, we are, again, I must stress, we're not there yet. I mean, there are still oil reserves around the world. And unless they can get the Strait of Hormuz open before those run out, then we're going to see some seismic economic effects that I think could have the potential to shape politics in the West in the same way that COVID did.
So given the fact that he was in the room, right, he was getting this information, he was getting this briefing from Netanyahu, from Mossad, but there was clear resistance from others within the room against this move in Iran, and lots of sort of interesting inside information saying there's people calling this out as BS, saying, look at this plan, it's just a fallacy, it's not going to work out like that. But Trump went ahead and listened to Benjamin Netanyahu and followed him into Iran. There's fallout there, but it has spread, hasn't it, far beyond cabinet, because we are now seeing these high profile allies of Donald Trump, including Megyn Kelly and Tucker Carlson, speaking out against him, being highly critical of the decision to go into Iran, and indeed how Donald Trump has responded to the fallout from that. How serious is that criticism? How influential is their opinion? And how difficult does this make things for Donald Trump?
Right. So I think we've been on this track for a while. Tucker Carlson has been highly critical of Israel for quite a few years now, particularly since he left Fox News. But you're right. I think the war in Iran has been a turning point in the same way, or at least in a similar way, to how October 7th was a turning point for, or the aftermath of October 7th was a turning point for those on the left in America. And we're seeing this in the polls. There was one poll out recently that says 60% of Americans now have an unfavorable view of Israel, which was up from 53% last year, and then 42% in 2022. And if you go into the party specifics, you see that there's a majority in both parties under 50 who have a negative view of the country. So the trend lines are quite clear. And for those people who say that this is a purely online phenomenon, I would say, well, politics is increasingly itself an online phenomenon. And, you know, we used to have this thing where we'd say Twitter isn't real life. It's like, well, yeah, well, we said this about wokeness as well. And then that actually did cascade through institutions and we did impact politics and it did become part of the political culture. So I do think we should be looking at these fringes of politics, because increasingly over the past decade or so, we've seen them become the mainstream. And I think that's going to happen here. Someone like Tucker Carlson, Megyn Kelly, Nick Fuentes and others, they do have these huge, huge audiences that are now competing with the ratings of the sort of mainstream broadcasters. And you can't underestimate the power of that and the way in which they've created this sort of parasocial relationship with so many of their viewers. Of course, it takes a lot of time to sort of percolate out into those that aren't on X every single day. But I do think that process is happening.
To look at somebody like Tucker Carlson, for example, and it is rumoured, although I know he has denied it, that he is considering a run for president in the next elections. I don't know if you have a viewpoint on how likely that is, but do you think this stance coming from within the MAGA movement of being more critical of the relationship with Israel will be a feature of the next election in America for Republicans?
I think so. I do, yes. I mean, we'll have to see how this war goes. The worse it gets, the bigger Israel feature in the next election. But yes, it's featuring the Democratic Party. It's the key foreign policy issue right now, much more so than restoring NATO or the transatlanticism or Ukraine or the UN or whatever that might be. The focus is very much still on the US-Israel special relationship. On the Republican side, yeah, I do. I think because there's a battle going on for the sort of soul of the MAGA movement. On the one side, you have the more evangelical Christian side that sees the Jewish Israel as the fulfillment of a biblical prophecy. And then you often have this other side, which is slightly more Catholic inflected, which is more skeptical towards Israel. And that is a battle that is being fought. And I'm not sure which way it will go. But yes, we are not at the end of this story yet.
Freddie Hayward, thank you so much for your insights and for joining us on News Talk Daily today.
Thank you.
What led Trump, at 79 years old, to sit in there in that Situation Room when Bibi Netanyahu was seated as an equal?
Yeah.
Trump didn't even sit at the head of the table. Trump sat at the side of the table and Bibi was across from him as an equal in the American Situation Room. What led him to sit there and buy what that guy was selling hook, line and sinker when every other president was able to see through that liar? What was it? Because he was told the next day by our own top advisors, from the chairman of the Joint Chiefs to the secretary of state to the vice president, that these are lies and that these objectives are not going to be attainable. Don't believe him. So I don't know how we got here, Piers. I'd like to know just as much as anybody else. But all I can think in my head, based on what I've read in the paper, is we got here thanks to Bibi Netanyahu, Lindsey Graham, and Mark Levin. And ultimately, President Trump. That's not to take agency away from the president, who was bamboozled. I don't know why. He was too weak to say no. He was too gullible to see through the lies. One way or another, he allowed himself to be pushed into this insane conflict.
I'm joined now by Dalia Schneider, public opinion researcher and columnist with Haaretz newspaper in Israel. You're very welcome to the podcast, Dalia. Can you start, I suppose, by just bringing us through the US-Israeli relationship prior to the attack in Iran and how it was viewed by the average Israeli?
Well, it's very interesting that you're speaking in the past tense because some, you know, obviously many here in Israel are concerned and following very closely on the, you know, with the suspicion that the relationship is changing. But that's been the case for a few years. I can say that going back decades, Israelis are very aware that America is their biggest patron, their biggest supporter, and have always counted on America and taken for granted sometimes that America is on Israel's side in a very broad sense. And what that has meant in practice is that America gives Israel enormous amounts of foreign aid, of course, and that even got higher under President Barack Obama, which, you know, he signed a memorandum of understanding with Israel that took the aid into, you know, $38 billion over 10 years, and also a great level of military support and, of course, political support, where we've seen over the years that America has often used its veto at the Security Council, for example, to, you know, to veto any Security Council resolutions that Israel considered bad. And so Israel was, at the policy level, very, very dependent on America for both the financial and economic aid, the military support, and the political support. The Israeli public, again, has always understood that and also seen quite a kinship with America. I think Israelis feel close to America. Americans are not a huge number in Israel in terms of immigrants, but they form a kind of outsized portion in Israeli engaged political life, political, social activism. The prime minister himself, Prime Minister Netanyahu, often likes to have American advisors or people with an American background. He himself lived in America when he was for part of his younger years and in some ways was criticized for that early in his political career. But the fact is, Israelis see a kind of cultural kinship as well. Everybody knows that that relationship has shifted over the years, but there's been a lot of conversation about what that really means. And I think that under Prime Minister Netanyahu's leadership since 2009, the real shift has been that throughout all of these years, the relationship was so strong that Israelis counted on what they called a bipartisan consensus in the U.S. about supporting Israel. And that was also the position of the pro-Israel community in the U.S. and advocacy groups. And it was a reality because both parties really didn't differ in their levels of support for Israel on the major aspects I just mentioned. But under Netanyahu, he really came to see the Democratic Party and its leaders and Democratic presidents as, you know, not as supportive, started to accuse them of not being as supportive. And it was often very disconnected to the levels of actual support on the three areas that I just outlined, especially, you know, for example, just what I mentioned about Barack Obama is just one example. But it really started during the Obama years. He portrayed Obama as bad for Israel, as having sold out Israel, as not supporting Israel's interests, partly because Netanyahu himself had taken such a radically hardline position, particularly with relation to the Palestinians, that even aspects of U.S. policy that were considered fairly normal and mainstream, you know, such as supporting a two-state solution, such as the fact that the Palestinian state would be somewhere along the Green Line, these aspects became, you know, sort of radically wrong for Israel under Netanyahu's perspective. And so he started to accuse Obama over the years of being bad for Israel. And that reached, you know, its worst moment. Really, it hit a nadir in 2015 when Netanyahu went to Congress to speak to Congress kind of behind the back of the president to speak out against what was emerging as President Barack Obama's signature policy to reach a negotiated deal with Iran. That deal did go forward, the JCPOA, the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, and Netanyahu fumed against it and then really started to just portray every Democratic leader as not good for Israel, not to mention the entire Democratic side of the map. Trump and Republican leaders, but particularly Trump, were considered like saviors. And as a result, there is really no more bipartisan consensus on Israel. In fact, supporters of the Democratic Party in Israel and many in the Democratic leadership are really, really critical right now and want to fundamentally change America's policy and orientation towards Israel. So it's a shifting environment. And now, as you correctly pointed out, even the Republican Party has a fairly deep split within it somewhere or more than one split between the neocon view that America should have strong military presence in the world and the isolationists who would prefer for America not to be involved in foreign wars, where the vice president, J.D. Vance, is kind of representative of that latter view, but also a split between, conservative Republicans who show high support for Israel and MAGA Republicans who are increasingly the kind of people represented by influential elites like Joe Rogan and Tucker Carlson, who are becoming so critical of Israel that they are easily venturing into anti-Semitism. So all of these things are troubling the U.S.-Israel relationship right now.
To go back to those sort of right-leaning MAGA leaders that you talk about there, the Tucker Carlsons, the Megyn Kellys, the Candace Owens, these people that have huge influence in the Republican Party, how worried are they about the rhetoric that is coming from them that, we need to push back here against Israel? We cannot take Benjamin Netanyahu at his word. We have been sold a pup here in terms of what's happened in Iran. This is no longer a relationship we can rely on or trust.
Yeah, I mean, I think Israelis are concerned about that, but their real concern is anti-Semitism. We are speaking actually on the International Holocaust Remembrance Day. And so Israelis are highly aware of anti-Semitism around the world. They see, they are tracking the rise in anti-Semitic incidents and anti-Semitism on campus. It's also an issue that is manipulated and overblown, as serious as it is. So there is simultaneously a rise in anti-Semitism around the world in the last few years. Actually, it goes back to the middle of the last decade, frankly, around the time that Trump first took office. And simultaneously, it is often, sort of abused and manipulated in order for Israelis to constantly feel like they are under threat and have to fight back and push back and often, really escalate their poor relations, or in the region, of course, it justifies military operations. And so there's a conflation of both real and, exploitation of anti-Semitism. But I think that's what Israelis are really keeping their eyes on in terms of the MAGA split. But looking solely at the split within the Republican Party as if it's a matter of the MAGA Republicans who are anti-Semitic also means that they're going to be ignoring what actually counts as genuine criticism of Israeli policy that will affect American policy. And so that makes it very hard for Israelis to stop, look at what they're doing, look at their policies and say, not only may these policies be wrong for Israel, but they're also troubling to the relationship, even with Israel's biggest supporter in the U.S., which is the Republican Party. It's making it difficult for Israelis to look at that in a pragmatic way.
Is there an understanding in Israel that U.S. and Israeli goals don't really fully align anymore when it comes to the situation in the Middle East?
There is an understanding with relation to Iran. It's something that's been discussed. But I think that the starting point was that this is a tremendous and spectacular partnership. The very fact that Netanyahu was able to win Trump's, cooperation for doing this war twice was seen, it's such a touchy issue because it looks like it plays into these nefarious anti-Semitic tropes about, Jews and Israelis having control. But the fact is that Netanyahu also is extremely proud and talks about this and, tries to take a lot of glory and credit for having the diplomatic skills to bring the U.S. into this war with Iran twice now, in June 2025 and in the present. And so Israelis do see that as an incredible diplomatic feat. But they are, so that's the starting point, which is also one of the reasons why Jewish Israelis particularly were so supportive of this war. In all polling we know from before the war, Israelis were, and, especially the Jewish population, which supported the war with Iran, were always very, less supportive of the prospect of going to war with Iran if Israel would have had to go it alone. And so bringing the U.S. in is considered a great thing. But having against that background, there is an emerging understanding that America and Israel have somewhat different goals, even though, again, the Israeli government has a very, practiced way of explaining that. They say, well, we are wonderful allies and everything is great and we have the best possible relationship, better than any other relationship ever between the U.S. and Israel, but we can disagree on certain things and even friends can sometimes have slight disagreements. What matters is that we see eye to eye about the evils of the Iranian regime. And that's the kind of message that you're getting out of Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu and, the Israeli government in general.
In terms of what we were speaking about earlier, in terms of this fracturing within the Republican Party, in terms of their support towards Israel, do you see this as sort of a short-term wobble, or do you see this as something more structural?
It's very hard to tell, but that is definitely the right question. In other words, this question has been on the minds of, you know, analysts like me, I think, really since somewhere in the middle of 2024. Because already we were seeing very significant split. You know, the partisan divide in America was already huge over the war in Gaza, and, you know, which really became Israel's war on Gaza after a certain point. And that was incredibly divisive, you know, really cementing the partisan divide, which also overlaps at this point with a very significant age divide. And in fact, in recent survey research, we're seeing that even among GOP supporters in the U.S., people under 50 are showing 57% who feel negative about Israel in the most recent Pew survey, which is a major transformation. So, you know, there is definitely, you know, the longer term question of whether this is something fundamental. And I have to say that when the question first became prominent over the Gaza war, you know, at some point in 2024, I kept saying it's too soon to tell. The American commitment to Israel is so longstanding. It's such a part of the American political culture and social culture, too. Let's also face it that there's a social and cultural and religious dimension even to it, because you have, you know, massive numbers of evangelicals who very much believe in the importance of Israel from a kind of cosmic theological perspective. But having said all of that, you know, even very long-term, you know, fixtures of political life can change. And I think what we're seeing now, especially when I see not just the partisan divide, but the age divide, I do think it's going to be very hard to reverse this. Okay. Now, it doesn't necessarily mean that America becomes irrevocably anti-Israel in terms of its perspective on the relationship, but it could also lead to something more like what some people are calling a more neutral normalization or de-exceptionalization of Israel in the American, you know, policy world, because Israel has enjoyed, again, sort of an extraordinary status when it comes to foreign aid, when it comes to also military and foreign aid, you know, that has been outside the bounds of some of the normal constraints of American law. And I think some of the progressive policy groups, including pro-Israel policy groups like J Street, have been saying, you know, just deal with the, you know, the kind of foreign and military aid to Israel the way you would any other country. So it's not necessarily that this is moving in an anti-Israel direction, but it could simply be a, you know, gearing towards Israel being less exceptionalized in American policy. The special relationship years may be on their way out. We don't know yet, but it's not impossible.
Dalia, thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
So do you think this Israel-US relationship has the foundations to last, or do most recent events prove it's a doomed marriage? Drop me an email. We'd love to hear from you. newstalkdaily@newstalk.com, or get me on Instagram @officialkiraD. Until tomorrow morning, thanks for your company. Goodbye.